Welcome to the podcast. My name is Danny Cola. Thank you so much for tuning in. In this episode, I interview Mark Wildman, Gareth Ham, also known as G Money Mustache, and Will Safford. We recorded this episode in Vieste, Italy, while attending the Human Fit Project Fitness Retreat, where we did many different unconventional fitness workshops. This was my favorite podcast that I was able to record out there because it just felt like longtime friends hanging out, chatting about life. We discussed an array of topics in this episode, like the European laid-back culture versus the fast-paced North American culture. Then we transitioned into talking about how people lived throughout human history. We covered other interesting topics like five generations theory and George Herbert's 10 primal movement patterns. We tie everything back to the importance of improving the world by radically improving yourself over your lifespan. Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I enjoyed having it. All right. Hey, how you doing, guys? Welcome. We are here broadcasting live from Vieste, Italy. It's day 7. I don't know what day it is. I don't know what time it is. But we're here and we're talking. Mark Wildman, how are you doing?
I am doing fine. I'm very full. I just had an amazing frittata cooked by your father.
That was an amazing frittata.
That was incredible.
Yeah, remember.
Your dad has skills. He literally just went in the backyard, picked up a bunch of herbs out of the garden, and whipped up the most amazing frittata from like leftover meat that we had in the fridge.
Yep, that
leftover
sounds about meat, right.
Eggs, some cheese, and a sad piece of butter.
Yeah, that's been my entire life. I swear to God, it's just like whatever we have in the fridge. Don't worry, Danny, I make something. Don't worry. And you see, like the accents. I've been listening to that accent my entire life, and I've been kind of imitating.
You got it down.
Danny, don't worry. I gotta make something. It's gotta be very good, you know. And I'll tell you, his cooking was always good. But since the last 12 years he's been here, all he's been doing is cooking. So it elevated to another level.
Well, he was explaining to us how he actually made it, and he was basically breaking down the science of it, and it's, yeah, he's got it down pat.
Yeah.
So it sounds like he really kind of lives off the land. Like they've got their gardens here. There's this idea also, someone was mentioning this here on the trip earlier, that it's the water here, because everyone drinks mineral water. So it's not filtered, it's not, you know, it's just raw, I guess, out of the ground. Everything is in wells here. So I think that really does something for your health when you're actually living off of your own garden. You're you know, making food that you are growing, you're drinking this natural, amazing water.
Yeah.
I think that adds to your health.
The water, the soil, the pesticides and shit they're putting into the food in the United States. Another thing that my dad told me since he's been living here the last 12 years, he doesn't ever have heartburn. Back at home, he was fucking having heartburn all the time. He was always popping Zantac. Dan, can you give me a Zantac? All right. You know, so here, the last 12 years, no heartburn, nothing. So back in the States, you know, you got people eating pesticides and, you know, and you're taking shitty water, bathing in shitty water, bathing in Wi-Fi all day, high stress, the go, go, go lifestyle. My dad also lives a very, very simple life. Like, he works when he wants to. He's off when he wants to. He cooks whatever the fuck
so
he wants.
Low stress.
Low stress. But it's not like the rat race that we're all in.
Exactly. And that's what I noticed last year when I came to Italy, was that there isn't this pressure. Everyone doesn't have this pressure on themselves to produce, you know? And you can say what you want about that. It's a little bit difficult to adjust to if you're from the United States, because it's a little bit slower paced here. But what I noticed was that the day seems a lot longer. So, you know, you get up, it's a more casual pace throughout the day. So time kind of like slows down here in Italy. And I think what you're getting to there is that your dad doesn't have a lot of stress.
And even we talk about like energy transfer, and if you're growing your own vegetables, like you're putting love and energy into those plants, and then you're eating that, like it's a direct circle.
Yeah,
I think it's a more natural way to live. Like if you were to think how we used to live, you know, for the last hundreds of thousands of years, your day was a very long, you from sun up till sundown, that's how much time you had to work, and you know, it was just a much slower pace. You were
Totally
living with the earth a little bit more, and I think that's kind of what they do.
And in the West, we don't fucking do that anymore, because we're always worried about the next goal that we have.
you know, the next thing that we got to do. Mark Wildman, what do you think? How has it been since all of the evolution of human history?
I think that Italy and the Mediterranean are unique, and they have an incredibly, let's call it, laid back lifestyle, because they have an abundance of stone. Everything is built out of stone. Things last a long time. People are living houses that are 400 years old. Trees here, olive trees are 100 years old. They plant that tree once, you have 10 olive trees, you have olive oil for the entire year. It's not like you have to keep reproducing things here. I think that that is a function of its height on the globe and its particular geography. So we don't have stuff like that in America. Like, I'm from Ohio, nobody builds out of stone because it's a black swamp. So you have wood, but the wood is always decaying. So much of America is always built out of things that generally decay. We have a lot of stone buildings, but it's not like 90% of the buildings like it is here. A lot of the buildings that you see here are, could be hundreds of years old in some way because of the building materials that they have access to, and that leads them to have to work generally less. And it doesn't get cold here. Like, you live somewhere in the northern climate, you prepare for winter because winter is coming. Yeah. That means you have to have wood. That means you have to actually survive. Here, you could just kind of stay inside of a stone building that had been built 300 years ago and eat a bunch of olives, and you would be generally okay. Yeah. There's not like the demand placed on humanity for survival in this particular environment the way that it is the further north you get.
See, the thing is, in the West, we have this go, go, go mentality, which kind of drives innovation and putting us forward and, you know, make us the superpower of the world. Now we can argue maybe we're not the superpower in the world anymore. But do you think we'll ever condition the next generations to have more of a laid-back lifestyle? Do you think we'd ever go back in that direction? The pendulum swings all the time, and when people start to wake up collectively that they're putting themselves in these fight or flight situations to work for their boss and make a yearly salary and all this stuff and keep on going and work all these hours, do you think we'll ever, and this is for any of you, condition the next generations to have more of that laid back approach? Or
I don't know if it's going to be like an intentional laid back approach, but I think what we're doing is we're programming the youth. Seems to be getting programmed, because
we're all getting programmed, by the way. All of us become programmed, and that's how we work. We're all being conditioned. It's just a matter of how are you conditioning yourself. If you become self-aware, become more aware, you can condition yourself to achieve whatever it is that you want. But at the end of the day, we can keep going, build our empire. So what, we can lay back and go to become the Viesta, you know, once a month and just kind of relax? Or what, you know, what's the goal here? How are we trying to live life? And that might be unique to everybody, you know, on an individual level. What do you think, G-Money?
Well, I definitely think it depends on where you live, right? So I live in Vancouver, which is known for being such a walkable city. I live in the downtown, and everything is so connected in that case. So the pace is slowed down even in that situation, even with all the buildings and the level of interaction and technology industry that's there. When you're able to connect on that level, again, the walkable city and just being comfortable stepping outside your house, I feel that that's very positive. And I've been to obviously other cities, and even San Diego, where I grew up, there's different parts of the city that do have that kind of vibe. But if you're not in it, then I mean,
yeah, but New York doesn't have that at all. You know, New York is like, it's a walkable city. Everyone walks in New York, but that's like not the mentality at all. Like, you know, be friendly to your neighbor and let's have like
New York is the worst. They're fucking mad at each other all the time.
Yeah. New York is also an older city than Vancouver, to be fair. New York's like the
completely different country, completely different climate. Like, I think that has a lot to do with it, because Vancouver is a beautiful city. And now that I'm thinking about it, when I was in Vancouver, it didn't get dark until like 11 p.m.
So during the summertime, yeah, that would be accurate.
So you guys have completely different like light, you know, system than we're getting over there in the Northeast. And I think all of those things have an effect on type of community that's going to develop in that region, which is, you know, maybe why getting back to Italy, it's so, like Mark was saying, it's so wildly different. They don't have those harsh winters. They have their stone here and their olive trees and they're content. And they can just enjoy life. Whereas, you know, the Northeast, there's this theory that those winters and the amount of people in that area just leads to high stress.
Makes you more defensive naturally.
I mean, they've done these tests with like rats, right? You put rats into a cage and there's a ton of rats, too many rats, and they all get high stress and they fucking fight each other and they die quicker.
And they create unnatural hierarchies of violence and yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What's the name of that famous rat test? They keep repeating it and it keeps happening the same way over and over and over again, which is what I think is happening right now in America. I'm going to pull this back to like 700 Baghdad and go with Ibn Khaldun's theory of five generations. Anybody?
No, keep going. I want to know though.
Please continue.
Okay. So
as we found out, history is really important to understanding the human body and how we train and why we train, which is something we'll segue into later on, but go ahead and start with that.
So this is the one that really captured me, and framed a lot of the way that I view the world entirely. That there's the theory of five generations. It was laid out by this one guy a long, long time ago. It might not be 700. It's somewhere in that range. But I think it was Baghdad, but it's back when Baghdad was the height of civilization and they were creating all the mathematics and all the great architecture and all those patterns that are in mosques around the world, which are really mathematical fractals. But the five generations theory is something that you see everywhere all the time. And the generations start at different points based on resources. So generation one is the first generation, and they are the builders. They are the people who create the companies, who build the country, who do the revolution. They create a system. It's hard and it's rough, but they fight and they fight and they fight and they work and they work and they work and they build a great level of success. Second generation comes in and they learn from the founders themselves. The founders pass that knowledge on. The young people see the struggle and then they learn to maintain it. They don't originate it, but they maintain it. Generation three is now separated. They didn't see the origin, but they have a bunch of stuff. So they kind of don't fully understand how things work. You get to generation four. This is where you get a bunch of weird people who think that they're artists, but probably aren't very good artists. Right? This is the, like, they go, like, rich kids going to art school generation, which is kind of where we're at. A bunch of people who are studying a bunch of useless stuff that doesn't make any money because they don't have to, because they're living on the wealth and the systems that were created by the people who came before them. Then you get to generation five. They have no clue why anything is the way it is. They don't know their own history. They don't know why things are the way they are. And you see this repeat over and over and over again, and then everything falls. So when you want to think about America, you had the original first generations. Before even the founding of America, you had the people who got there in the early 1600s. And there's a whole history that nobody even talks about that's 150 years of these micro countries that were land grants before 1776. I think like the first generation is really starts in like 1750 in America. And then we get those founders, the people who came up, George Washington through the French Indian War. They learned a bunch of stuff about how to expand and how to try to make a better world. They created a generation, and the generations start there for a lot of the East Coast. The reason America has continued to expand is because you continued to push west. And you kept getting a new generation one every time you expanded west. You went into the Ohio Valley, you got a new generation one. When you went across the Mississippi River, you got a new generation one. The Oregon Trail, you got a new generation one, 1886, right?
What would be your hypothesis as to how we recreate a new generation one? How can my son and his group of kids that are growing up here in 2023 potentially be that new generation one?
I mean, I just think it's, I think it's all cycles. I think it all comes around. It's like that saying, like, hard times create strong men, strong men create easy times create weak men. Yeah. And then it's a loop.
And then it's a loop, and you start over. So we're kind of, we've run out of room to expand west. So there's some people who are trying to expand up. Elon Musk is trying to create a new generation one on Mars. But America, we've kind of hit generation four or five. And you'll notice things tend not to be going all that well. You don't have a lot of people interested in going to welding school. They want to go study, you know,
gender studies
or something like that. Yeah. Something that doesn't build bridges. Something that's not carving marble.
So does this theory, in this theory, does the civilization collapse after generation five?
That usually leads to
Do a reset. It's a new generation times. One who starts the revolution, right?
That's, so now you have to have some type of revolutionary act or revolutionary thing.
War.
Something like that, which will create those hard times, which will create strong men, which will start the five generation cycle
it's too
over
bad.
Again.
It was like, man, if there could be some kind of like global thing that just took over the world for like a couple of years to reset us, and maybe we'd come out better on the other side.
So yeah, you would think that that would be true, but I don't think that that was the point of what that was about. No, that was the point about creating more Generation 5. Hmm.
So right now there is a lot of talk about generations, Gen Z, X, whatever, the different dynamics. And personally, so my mother was actually raised by a man who was 30 years older than her mom, her stepdad. And so he grew up in the Depression. So he had a completely different mindset than even the grandparents of my dad. Because he is just that much older, and he remembers when there was an actual collapse. And he raised my mom to be like a vicious, or like just somebody who would survive no matter what. And he explained, you know, in gruesome detail, all the things that happened to all the people during that time.
Your family came over from World War One during the Holodomor, I believe it was, from the Russian Revolution in Ukraine, and traveled through to northern Canada.
Yeah, and that would have been them breaking ground. Yeah, breaking ground out in the prairies. Yeah, still happens as people go farther and farther out. But I find that I have a major disconnect with people of my own generation. Part of that is because my mom was a direct line for, or like, you know, I'm only one removed. My mom expressed all of those things to me.
She was a Gen 1 in her own way, mm-hmm. thus creating you a Gen 2 type of person.
Yeah.
But we have names for this. We have the greatest generation, World War II. Hard times create strong men. Then we got the boomers. They got all the benefits of mm-hmm. all the hard work that was done by the greatest generation. And they burned a lot of stuff, but they built a lot of stuff. They created a world which has never been seen in all of human history. Super highways, cars, manufacturing, it's the greatest level of wealth ever seen ever in all of human history. Then you got Gen X, and we got rock and roll. We still had some good hard work. Then we got millennials. You'll notice millennials and boomers do not get along.
Hey.
Then we got Gen Z, and now we know that Gen Z is not kind of liked by almost anybody who's older than them, because Gen Z doesn't even get along with Gen X, right? Like, they do not really like each other, because Gen X was in a world before the internet. They are the last generation. Kids born in 80 to 86 are the last people to remember a time before smartphones, before the internet, when you had to like show up where you said, somebody mm-hmm. called you on the phone, you agreed to meet somewhere, and you actually went there on time. That doesn't exist for anybody who was born after 96, for the most part, unless they grew up in some weird part of Canada or in the Northern Arctic Circle. Right?
Canadians. Right.
Canuckians.
I think we need a good collapse. I think all throughout history, we've seen rises and collapses. And even in nature, you see ecosystems rise, collapse, rebuild themselves. But now we've gotten to a point where we try as hard as we can to prevent the collapse. So for example, I've been trying to buy a house for the last couple of years. They are doing everything they can to prevent this housing market from collapsing. And they're doing things that are actually worse for the health of the ecosystem. So it's like, just let the thing collapse and you know, it will naturally kind of figure itself out. It's the same thing with the economy right now. We're throwing all this cash. We did throw all this cash at it. And then it just led to insane inflation. Right?
I mean, It's still going. So what does it look like when they try to keep it alive? Like, what does that mean? Just keep throwing cash at everything?
It looks like the Weimar Republic.
What's that?
It looks like the Weimar Republic.
What is that? Look, mass hyperinflation.
Germany after World War One was overly taxed, and their solution by the countries who won World War One, they put a giant bill on Germany. They were worked super hard. They were taking all their money. Hyperinflation came in, created a place where extremism could thrive, because somebody said, hey, these people are kicking the shit out of you for no reason. And somebody comes in and talk real good and says, we're going to make the trains run on time. And suddenly you get a problem. So by actually not letting the system collapse and self-regulate by artificially trying to solve the problems, as they do by printing more money to keep the system going, they're actually making the future collapse much worse. Yeah. So World War One, led to World War II because it created the conditions economically for this bad thing to happen because German lives matter. And somebody came along and said that and told a bunch of people these things. And then it created an extremist group. And then we got World War II. So what's happening now seems awfully similar sometimes. You have potential housing collapses. They try to push it off instead of letting the system self-regulate. Right now, they're printing an ungodly amount of money, causing inflation to go up, but also devaluing the hard work that all these people did their entire life. They have savings. Their savings are worth, what, 17% every year, 17% less every year. So all the hard work that they did is mattering less and less and less. All of their planning is being destroyed for a very bad thing. And that's going to eventually lead to the creation of rises in various competing extremist factions, which will be generally bad for civilization, which will probably lead to hard times, which will probably create strong men. We're just not going to like living through it because we won't be able to go to the grocery store and get all that awesome stuff like pear juice that they have here.
One of the, it's going to be hard times.
One of the strengths, though, of the American system, the North American system, and capitalism as it's structured, is the concept of like positive destruction or destruction that that leads to construction, right? Even during the pandemic, like so many businesses went under, but technically that opened up opportunities for other people to open businesses in those spaces. And that's what's happened every single time there's been any sort of dramatic shift in the economy in America. And it does suck for those people. And, you know, it's definitely a part of how we've built this society is everything is built on the foundation of the last thing and it never ends. And yeah, there's definitely something to be said for understanding that system.
So I have something to add to that. While that I think that it's very true, I think that we're in a unique situation now because normally when an economy self-regulates itself, it's nobody's fault. But like in California and San Francisco, I think it's 60% of small businesses went out of business forever. They lost everything, right? I was one of those guys in California who lost everything, all the hard work I had ever done. And it wasn't because it was a natural thing. Somebody did that. Somebody intentionally kept your business closed, even though the math of what was happening did not support their reaction to it. And even after the data no longer supported the conclusion, they continued to do it, which continued to rob more people of all of their hard work and their homes and everything else.
Yeah.
And that is a problem because that creates a way to create resentment. And that resentment can then eventually lead to some type of groups forming and then creating competing factions based on, I didn't do this to myself. Somebody else did this to me, which is something that happened in Russia, it happened in China, it happened in all these places throughout history, and it usually didn't go great.
No. Do you guys think that if we keep having these like artificial means to prop up and prevent the collapse, that nature will actually take care of it for us?
Oh, at some point. Oh, yeah, it's a statistical
nature's got to do its thing, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, like, how, like, so what?
Mega volcano, solar flare.
It's usually a virus. It's usually some type of self-regulating virus that removes a large part of the population. If the population goes down, creates more jobs, creates a need for more innovation. Mm-hmm. So like Spanish flu, for all the people who died, it did kick the economy pretty hard for the whole world. Usually it's viruses, but now that we've created all these vaccines, like kids today get 200 vaccines. Like you should get like six, right? You should get like, you know, measles, mumps, rubella, but like the chicken pox vaccine doesn't help anybody. It's only going to make something worse because kids never get this totally survivable illness that keeps them out of school for 5 days. And they don't learn how much it sucks. They don't learn that. Yeah. And I think that has a lot to do with cognitive.
How old were you guys when you got the chicken pox?
Less than 10 years old.
Yeah, I was like
third grade, maybe?
Yeah,
My sister got them, and then my mom made me go like.
Yeah, they used to rub you on the kids. They would like take a child and like slam it on a child with it because they're like, they get sick now, they're going to survive.
Right.
The older you get, the more horrific.
But obviously vaccines, like we need some vaccines.
No, you need some vaccines. MMR, polio, yes. Smallpox or Chickenpox? No, we don't need that vaccine. It's not helping us. It's taking away a totally survivable thing that provides constant exposure to herd immunity. It keeps adults from getting shingles later in life because adults are around kids who have chickenpox. They get more exposure. Their antibodies go up.
Dude, I remember my dad, 29 years old, bathing in oatmeal or whatever because he got chickenpox after me.
At 29.
It's all because he never got it here in Italy. There was nothing. I mean,
really?
Not to my knowledge. I don't know. Well, he never got them. Maybe they did get them in Italy or whatever, but he never got them because you only get them once. And once you get them, you have that immunity to it.
You get it later in life, and it's called shingles, and it kills you.
Yeah. Mm.
So they're constantly having little kids around who have chickenpox helps everybody not get shingles in the future. By making sure kids don't get chickenpox, nobody gets exposed to shingles. The odds that shingles kills a bunch of old people goes up. So it's a weird thing. It doesn't really help.
I wonder what the germs and like the disease situation is like in those like tribes that haven't had contact with like modern man, you know, those guys deep in the jungle. Well,
so the origin of all of these diseases that are coming out is from the domestication of animals. It's our close interaction with mass slaughter and just being around the bio exchange or whatever.
Really? Domesticated animals?
COVID is SARS-CoV-2, which is a avian flu that comes from originally like poultry, basically.
Mm.
And then like mad cow disease and just all of them, all the major ones come from some relation that humans have with animals on a massive scale that is unnatural up until the point when we domesticated animals.
So most disease, right? So there wasn't much disease when we man was nomadic because we constantly moved. So we made this like bargain and it was like, do we have food? Do we settle and farm and have a surplus of food so that we can eat and survive? But with that comes all the disease because you're staying in one area, things are festering, they're not moving around. So it was like this huge pivotal moment in the history of man, but also led to all these diseases that we now have today.
Yeah.
So animal husbandry happened more in Europe because they have like, what are the four main animals? You have sheep, pig, goats, cattle, and horses. Horses aren't really in the thing, but the other ones are ones that we eat a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, we had these. In the Americas, you didn't have any of these.
Yeah.
In some place that's really cold, you cohabitate with your animals inside. The barn is like a new thing in history. It used to be a big longhouse that you went inside and you kept your animals inside with you in winter. So you're literally sleeping next to your cattle or the pigs inside.
So fucking weird. My mom used to sleep in the barn.
In order to keep them safe, they're where you can see them. No wolves are going to eat them.
In the doghouse.
They also provide more heat because there's giant animals creating heat, right? So people did it as a survival strategy, but it caused that cross species sharing of germs and adaptation, which is where you get a lot of the diseases from Europe. And they didn't have any of those animals in the Americas. So when the Europeans went over there, they dragged a bunch of diseases that didn't exist anywhere here. Because the only domesticated animal was the alpaca, the llama.
How the fuck do you guys know all this stuff?
How do you not know this?
I know it now. And that's the beauty of having a podcast and asking questions.
Yeah, but I'm just giving you trash.
Well, like you guys like spit it off. Like you guys have, like just listened to a podcast on it like not that long ago.
Well, to be fair, we do listen to random podcasts on random things like this all the time.
Well, we also, I do a lot of like random looking shit up.
It's great.
Where like, I'm like, oh, do they have elk in Russia? And then I like look up the population of elk in Russia and then the family tree. And then when they think it diverged, how similar are the giant deer in Russia versus the giant deer in America? Where do they have deer? Now I'm looking up population maps of deer and like, oh, islands have tiny deer with vampire fangs for some reason.
Yeah.
Because islands are small, all animals get small. They get pygmy deer.
Or where did the American antelope come from?
Yeah, where is the American antelope? Oh, it's a speed goat. It's a weird goat thing that diverged and just got super fast and it doesn't drink water. Because you see a bunch of goats in the middle of Colorado and you're like, there is no water here. What are they living on? And they do this crazy thing, goats, where they slide under fences like parkour athletes. They run at a dead sprint and they slide under fences and pop up and run.
Goats are badass. You ever seen those ones that live on the sides of mountains?
Oh, yeah. They're fucking terrifying.
Just one little tiny little piece of the rock is like sticking out and their whole body weight is incredible.
There's all these things about animals, but like, so cohabitating with animals in Europe. they come to America, they bring pigs and all these other things. The thing that really defeated all of the Americas was disease. So there's this theory that the people never landed in North America, not because South America had a bunch of stuff, it's because they were too scared to land in North America, because there are journals that say that they could smell the smoke from the fires 100 miles out to sea. So there were way more people, let's say 90% more people than when the pilgrims got here in 1610. So there's a crazy story about
this. Oh, 100%.
What were all the fires
from people from existing? Civilization. Oh. The largest city on earth was Mexico City, Tenochtitlan. It was like twice the size of London. There was over 1 million people living there at the time of like Jesus Christ, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So in North America, so think about it, the Spanish land in South America and in the Caribbean, the disease starts there. There's no planes, there's no trains, there are no automobiles. So that disease spreads village to village, one village at a time, annihilating the population.
90% is the estimate of the human population that was wiped off from the landing of Columbus on an island off the coast of the Gulf of Mexico.
So the guy who taught the pilgrims to grow corn was captured by the Spanish. He had come from Massachusetts, where Pilgrim Rock was, and he had walked on a trading journey all the way down to like Florida, I think it was, where he was captured in a raid by Spanish sailors. He went on this crazy odyssey that was 10 years, where he was taken to Europe, he learned Spanish, he worked as a sailor, he was taken as a curiosity, he went around England and London. He eventually got back on a boat to sail back to America. He got close to the shore, he jumped off, he swam ashore, and then he then walked all the way back to his city. When he left, there was a thriving culture. When he got back 10 years later, there was absolutely nothing left. Everyone's because dead. The disease had finally gotten to the East Coast.
Yeah.
So when the pilgrims landed, they described it looked like a garden, because mm-hmm. it was a food forest that had been planted and maintained for hundreds of years by the natives, mm-hmm. but nothing was built out of stone. In 10 years, a bunch of things built out of wood with no modern materials turned back into nothing. And so the pilgrims walk into an area and they just encounter what are essentially the Mad Max survivors of a once great civilization. 90% of all people died. If you lose 30% of the population of any culture, it devolves because there's not enough core maintained skills to maintain the culture. You lose 30%, everything goes downhill fast. 30%, 40%, 30%, 30%.
Okay, so
but if you lose 90, they just go straight back to this. Literally,
it is an apocalypse. There is nothing left.
There's nothing left.
So then, all right, let's do a thought experiment. Then, what do those 10% of those people do? Hunt, gather.
They run away from the cities.
Learn to stick fight.
Yes, they do all that. They go back to doing exactly what they need to do to survive.
They probably do a lot of banging. Honestly, they're trying to repopulate that shit.
Yeah, but not until they get a bunch of food.
Yeah.
Because the farming system is now gone, so now they got to figure out how to refarm.
But you also need more hands on deck, right, to help with the farm and help. That's why people back in the day had so many kids. It's a good question, man. I bet there was a lot of tribes that just dissolved. That was it. Because people were at each other's throats and
they had cities on the East Coast as well. Like they're finding, they have these ancient walls that they still haven't technically explained yet all over the East Coast, right?
Yeah, and earthen walls and stuff.
Yeah.
Man, for most of human history, there were basically two things that were going to kill you, right? And this is until fairly recently, it was starvation and disease. And the disease that killed you was like a terrible, slow, torturous death.
Malaria.
Yeah, you had no knowledge to how to fight, and you didn't know. It was just miasma in the air, as they called it.
I think it's within the last like 200 years where life has been like pretty stable, where you didn't have to, it might even be less than that.
The majority of all humans that have died on the planet died of malaria.
What's the age, or how long have human beings been in this form? How long have human beings been around? What's the number that you've heard?
Fucking odd. You're asking the wrong guy. I would ask Mark Wildman.
What number?
I hear it's 200,000 years.
Yeah, I've heard Gareth.
I don't have a date to guess, but I love studying ancient hominids and the the connections and the exit from Africa and how our genome was affected by our interactions with these other hominid species. Yes. Homo floresiensis now, like there's a few that have been discovered in the Pacific or the Southern Pacific Islands that are really shaking up. Denisova Cave, I believe.
Denisovans.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It's really interesting.
Approximately 300,000 years ago, the first Homo sapiens.
See, it's really that's how modern humans. But man, I think it's way longer than that.
I think it's way longer than that.
It's way longer than that, for sure.
But let's think about this. Let's assume it's 200,000 years. We have approximately 5,000 years of kind of recorded history. It gets pretty fuzzy about 3,000 years back, right? So 5,000. So 5,000 out of 100 is 5%. Out of 200,000, it's 2.5%. So we know, we have like a general idea of what humans have been doing for 2.5% of all of human history in very specific areas where they built out of stone and they wrote stuff down and they carved it into stone.
Wow. That's crazy.
That's it.
2.5%. What are your thoughts about like lost civilizations like Atlantis? Okay. So like Atlantis was, you know, people talk about
in the north of Africa,
where they built the city on circles, concentric circles. So yeah. Like, what are your thoughts about that? That a civilization that maybe potentially existed that, it's not written in history that people know nothing about. And like, maybe there is a level of optimization that humans are capable of achieving that this generation of humans have forgotten.
I think that I call this the alien thumb theory.
Mm-hmm.
This is your own theory?
I don't know. It's the only way I can explain it.
Dude, you're a wild thinker. I mean,
his recall is actually pretty impressive.
It's fucking unreal. Like, move over, Andrew Huberman. Here's fucking Mark Wildman. If we don't get this guy to start his own podcast here in the next little bit, if this doesn't inspire him to have a Mark Wildman Athletica podcast, then I don't know what the fuck will.
All right, so I'm gonna blow your mind with this one, because I thought about this one for a long time. So I was thinking about ancient civilizations and what technology did they have? We have these magical crystals that we call phones, which are magic glass, which talks to outer space, which tells us everything and does a bunch of weird stuff for us. And it's getting even more magical every day. It's magic. It's magic.
It is.
Solid state computer drives are magic. There are no moving parts. You beam information into them like it's a magic
crystal. Till everybody gets like 3D computer printers that they're able to just manufacture whatever the fuck they want right there.
But here's, so
if we ever get there,
your phone is a magic piece of glass, but it contains all the information of the world. Its society ends. The kids will remember that this magic piece of glass used to do something, but they will have no ability or understanding
how to duplicate it.
How do you have to plug it into the wall every X number of time with this specific phase of power. That power is generated and it travels across the earth in metal lines that we either bury under the ground or hang in the sky that comes from someplace super far away. The magic glass is powered by something that they cannot fully understand. Society ends, they just know magic glass. And then they go about worshiping magic glass, and then somebody comes along and goes, I can psychically understand how to get the information out of this magic glass, and the magic glass talks to me, and they create their own priest class in order to help have people, you know, hunt for them so that they can just hang out, right? So the alien thumb theory, let me bring it back around, because I'm going to bring it back around. I was thinking about phones. So if an alien is a substantially more advanced species than we are, it compare us to dogs. We cohabitate with dogs. We have for 10,000, 20,000 years. They are our best friends. A dog has no possible way to operate a phone, and he has no possible way to operate a hammer, right? The phone is magic glass. The hammer is the thing that built all of civilization because they don't have thumbs. They can see humans do it. They could get super smart, but they could never, ever, ever use our technology because they don't have thumbs. So if there's an ancient civilization or an alien civilization, what are their thumbs that keep us from operating any of their technology, which would allow us to have access to what they do? Right, there could be alien iPads floating around everywhere. They could be crystal skulls.
What if it's telepathic, or what if it's like something that they do with their mind?
What makes us think that their telepathic shit isn't an alien thumb? What makes us think that we would ever be able to get alien thumbs? Dogs will never have thumbs. There's no way they're going to randomly evolve to get thumbs. So whatever's out there, we might have absolutely no possible conceivable way of ever understanding.
Maybe they're not even carbon-based life forms.
Yeah, maybe it's a completely other life form for sure.
But it's still alien thumbs. What is their thumb? It's still a thumb.
So you're talking about an alien thumb as a symbol.
A symbol.
Right, like we have the thumb, it makes us
If there are ancient stuff. Civilizations and they created some other version of technology, we no longer have the plug to plug it in. So we could never understand Atlantis because we simply don't have a point of reference to understand.
My thought is that they were so connected collectively that they were able to move things with their mind. They were able to send messages with their mind as opposed to the way we do it here with our magic glass phones.
But there was a great reset. There was that event
where 90% of the people gone, and then you have 10% of the people left, and then that's too small a population to
remember.
Like, you're not even talking about people at that point, though, right?
Getting back to that.
I mean, an elevated human. Who knows, like, what type of elevated human existed before we got here? I mean, before the reset hit, and then we were kind of going back to that again.
So there was a...
took a wrong turn, or not a wrong turn, a different turn, where we have electricity, and then things start, the Industrial Revolution, and things started to move in a different direction than our ancestors in Atlantis.
Or maybe we were too smart for our own good, and we started things started getting out of hand, bringing it back to the five generation theory, right? And there were just a bunch of weak species, weak humans back then.
They just forgot how to operate their own technology.
The Earth was like,
which we are actively doing right now. Like it said that we would not be able to rebuild the internet, even with all the technology that people understand now. The people that built the internet know what they were doing. And we just use what they built.
Yeah, like Cat5 fiber optic cable is once again fucking magic, right? Like people who actually understand how to build a phone, like an iPhone, are extremely limited, and it's based on mining with these giant machines. And there's special knowledge to build giant machines, and it's based on some other knowledge about steels. And without all these interrelated pieces of like, what is the word I'm looking for here?
Knowledge, information.
But I'm trying to go through like specific things. Structural science.
Oh, I see.
People who material science. Like there's like 87 fields of material science. There's different types of metal. There's different types of ceramic. There's like three guys on the world who invented like the concept of fiber optic. And they're like, I'm going to make this thing. It bends and I can shoot light through it in pulses. And then somebody's like, I can make a chip that reads that at the speed of light.
It's going to
transfer it into zeros and ones. And you're going to have a magic piece of glass in your hand.
If a meteor the same size as the meteor that took out the dinosaurs were to hit us right now,
oh, we'd all be dead.
No, of course. But all that information that you're talking about
gone.
Is all wiped.
Yeah.
That's all gone too. Unless you figure out, getting back to your alien thumb, some future species looks at a hard drive.
Yeah.
It's got all the information of life on it. They're like, how do we extract this information? They don't.
So this is why I think that so many cultures made such an effort to carve shit into stone. Like there's a couple of cultures like the ancient Egyptians, and they were like, something super bad happened and we remember it and we know we can't get information back out. What's the only way we can get people to read shit in the future? And they're like, what if we build a giant cave underneath the ground and we carved it all in there and we made it fucking pictures?
Is that the one in Turkey?
They show up all over the world.
No, but like the Egyptians, there is literally pictures. It's pictures. This is a crane and we associate it with this. It's literally emoji texts. They're like, if somebody doesn't speak our language, could we still get it through to them? And I think a bunch of weird Egyptian guys workshopped this for several hundred years. And they're like, this picture means this. And it makes really good sense. And they were like, we'll carve this knowledge in there. And then somebody in 1,000 years, long after we're dead, will come back and read it and know our knowledge.
So what are we making now that people will be able to, in 5,000 years, look back and read?
Podcast.
Was that podcast?
Yeah. Podcast. I mean, I don't know. Maybe
that's like the in Tenet, right? They leave anything electronic, it speaks to the future, right?
Now, if you send signals out into space, but somebody's got to be out there to read them or to read them on the other side. So aliens will hear us long before anybody here hears them. There was a mountain, saw a bunch of rich dudes like 10, 20 years ago were trying to hollow out in New Mexico. What was it called? I think it was the Rosetta Stone. It wasn't the Rosetta Stone. It was the Rosetta Project, I think. And they were trying to take information, carve it into metal plates and bury it in a mountain in New Mexico.
Yeah. There's Tramontina Air Force Base has a doomsday vault that has titanium plates that have various.
But you hear about this in like, is it Aztec or Mayan? The Aztec or Mayan, some Spanish conquistador was looking for the library because there was supposed to be a cave where all the information was written on gold. And it was a library that they had made to preserve their knowledge. And nobody has ever found the library. Or if they did, they melted it all down. Mm. But what's the great thing about gold and silver?
It's indestructible.
It doesn't oxidize. So you can carve shit into gold and it will stay there forever. So is that why humans value gold? Did originally we carve information into gold plates and put it in caves underground? And people were like, oh, people really like this. And somebody who didn't understand goes, oh, they like the gold. And it's like, no, they like the gold with the information on it. Mm. But it kind of just turned into store gold. They kind of forgot why. So
it's
I
really
think that that's...
Out, man, that they're not going to remember this generation at all.
Oh, no. They're not going to remember anything.
And this is the... I mean, from what we know, this is the best time in human history.
This is the best one that we know about.
Yeah.
It was probably super sweet a long time ago.
Well, maybe the Atlantis time, like I said, they had capabilities of teleportation or clairvoyance. Like, there are holistic coaches out there right now, like Paul Check, for example. He says that he's clairaudient, clairvoyant, can jump dimensions. I'm not sure how much I believe that, but they say that you have to believe in order to develop those powers. Do you
that sounds like something cult leaders say.
You think so?
Yes.
All right, I'm
just
gonna,
a little bit.
So we're 45 minutes in. It's 6:30. We do have a place to be, but I have this technology on this device where I can phone in a guest, and my thought is to give Maurizio a call and see if he can hop on this podcast.
Oh, no.
What are your thoughts?
Please, that is a terrible idea.
Please don't do that. We're already 30 minutes late for his special dinner.
Let's talk about something like human movement real quick.
Okay, real quick. So before, and we'll do this, we'll say another 15 minutes. Before we started this podcast, Mark Wildman and Will Safford here and G Money Mustache and myself, we were outside stick fighting, and it's the first time I've ever seen stick fighting, and it's one of the first things that made me understand like why we do mace flow. And a lot of people give shit about people who do mace and clubs, and it's not, it's a fad and it shouldn't be done and blah 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 and bullshit like that. But we talk about the end of the world, we talk about civilizations moving on and great resets and all that shit. You had to learn how to defend yourself. So as I was going through some of these stick fighting exercises, I started to realize, oh my God, this is why we do fucking mace flow. This will help you build your grip. This will help you build a stance. This will help you fucking figure out a way to kill somebody and fucking hit him in the head. So, and a lot of these movements translate over, and it just made me kind of go, oh my goodness, this is why some of these modalities are beneficial for building human body, building the human brain, potentially building up the fascia. So like, you know, Mark, you've been doing this for a long time. Give me like in a quick couple sentences, if you can fucking do that, why stick fighting, why you teach stick fighting seminars, and why it's important to relating some of that to how we train today.
So
and then everybody else should kind of chime in on that. I know we were all doing it a little bit.
The stick fighting, what I am teaching is a recreation of the learning pattern of stick fighting. So there's no Filipino martial art here. There's no Japanese martial art. What I am doing is having people rediscover the most important movements that humans do by having them perform a set of experiments for X amount of time. This is all a mathematical thing because I am a super nerd. Nerd, thank you, G Money.
So that means your left brain is fucking on more than your right brain.
No, it just means that I'm. It means that I took way too much engineering and it destroyed the other part of my brain. And now I always wanted to get really good at stuff, and nobody ever told me how to really do it. Everybody was always a shyster who was promising to teach you something but didn't. I think that staff fighting and the use of levers in particular is completely unique to humans. Alien thumb theory, except we're the aliens and we have thumbs. So sticks are levers. Levers are the most fundamental tool that humans use other than sharp rocks, which are inclined planes.
It's also the first thing you get taught in engineering is about levers.
It's levers, right? They're talking about this since ancient Greece. So humans have thumbs for a reason. It allows you to hold onto sticks. Your shoulder is optimized to swing sticks. Your core rotates a specific way, and your foot allows you to transfer that force into the ground. And so much of athletics today is artificial. People have forgotten why the human body is the way it is. We are lever users. The primary thing that we try to do is not die so we can propagate future generations. That means you need to learn how to not get hit in the head by other things that are trying to hit you in the head. So the whole thing is a series of scientific experiments where I'm trying to force people to make 10,000 specific decisions, not in a pattern. They are learning to develop their own pattern and pattern recognition, because this is what I think the human brain is designed by evolution or God to do and is optimized to do.
Yeah.
So G-Money has done this seminar with me now twice now?
Done the seminar twice, and then I carry those staffs around with me everywhere.
Did you also have that cathartic moment where you're like, oh my God, this is why we do Mace, this is why it's important?
I literally got on my fucking knees. I bought six of those staffs and I brought them home, and I've got a tiny little apartment in downtown, and I just went absolutely ape shit and just discovered. Yeah, exactly. That was, I mean, I think I expressed that, or we've been expressing that the whole time, but that was what I realized. I was like, oh, okay. There was a point to what I've been doing this whole time, and it's that now I know that I can stab, stick, or slash whatever it is that I need to do.
So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to give people a fundamental generation one, to bring it all back, knowledge of why things were the way they were and why things are the way they are. So this is an idea that I got from engineering school. In engineering school, in year one, they have you calculate gravity. Everybody in the room does it. There's a big inclined plane and you roll a ball down it and you track how long it takes. You repeat the experiment over and over. Based on the angle of the ramp, everybody, you do sine, cosine, tangent, and you calculate the speed of the fall. So the angle slows the ball down so that it takes longer. Then everybody in the room does the same math, and everybody in the room in all of human history has come up with 9.81 meters per second squared. Everybody. It is a law.
Acceleration.
So why can't, what?
Isn't that acceleration?
Yeah, it's the speed of gravity, right? Yeah. Acceleration of gravity, force of gravity. So I was like, why don't we do that with human movement? Can we set up a series of experiments that make it inevitable that everybody understand the most important human movements? So I set up a series of experiments. Two hands on a long stick is the easiest possible lever to use. And then we set up a series of offense and defense drills. And then we limit a factor, and then we add one step each time. So you start with 2 feet pointed straight ahead. Somebody swings a stick at your head, only at your head, because it limits the number of options. People start learning to block. They rediscover all of the movements. Hollow body in gymnastics is the first thing you discover. Locking out your arms, rotating your core, sitting down in your hips, side hip snap. Then you start adding in movement, walking forward or back. How many ways can you swing a stick while walking forward and back? How many ways can you block just while walking forward and back? There's no right answer. There is only the answer where you don't get hit in the
In the fucking head.
Mm-hmm. Right?
You blew my mind a little bit when we were doing that. You're like, why? You're not aiming at my head. You have to aim at my head. And the reason why you're not aiming at my head is because you're fucking civilized and you don't want to fucking kill me.
Yep.
Yes. But because you're trying to save me, you're actually more likely to hurt me. There's another line that I say that I heard G-Money say to Will, which is, if you don't know what you're doing, I don't know what you're doing. So now we're getting back into mindfulness and intent. You have to intend to swing at their head. If you don't intend to swing at their head, it's much dangerous, because the stick starts to move in these crazy paths and your brain can't predict where it's going to go, which makes it way, way, way harder. In the beginning, we're not trying to practice feints. We're not trying to trick anybody. We're trying to drive the experiment in the correct order so that people will discover the most important things. What everybody discovers is that the shield cast is super important. Mm. The shield cast to overhead press is in every culture in all of human history. And that if you push it long enough, everybody ends up in a warrior stance, warrior one and warrior two from yoga. Warrior one is closed hip, pointing your hip straight ahead. Warrior two is open hip. It's halfway to turning around to face something behind you. And then you go to museums, and what do you see in museums? Go to the British Museum.
Nothing but clubs and the maces.
You see clubs, you see maces. There's a whole wall in the British Museum that was taken out of a Greek building, and mm-hmm. it's set up. And it's like 90% of the people in there, it's not 90, maybe it's 85. Those people are all carved in warrior stance in some version of overhead press or shield cast or something. And it was so important 2,500 years ago, somebody carved it into stone and said, people should remember that. And in athletics today, everybody is forgot. We do all these other drills.
That's what
nobody's doing the most important things that humans do.
I only did a few minutes of that with the staff, right? But what I noticed was how important it is to have a mobile and free moving rib cage.
Mm. Yeah.
And if you, and it's really the relationship of the pelvis to the rib cage. Those two work together.
Separation.
Right? And that's, nobody is doing that. Everyone is constricting the rib cage with bench press and pulls, right? And you're just adding on tension and compression to this.
Well, because the primary goal is fucking abs and big chest and biceps and shit.
But it's because we're so far
from reality that's what they can get away with.
If you think about the ribs, they really do need to expand and they need to be able to rotate. And your shoulder blades are attached to your rib cage. So if your rib cage is fucked up, it's all the positions out of whack, it'll mess up not only your shoulders, which fucks up your arms and your hands and your wrists, but it'll mess up your pelvis, which your, you know, knees and feet are connected to. So for me, that was one of the biggest game changers, is the mobility and being able to fully twist and rotate your rib cage. And also, your lungs and all your vital organs are in your rib cage. So if those don't have room to expand and move and blood to flow,
really stuck energy,
you're messing up the entire system. Yeah. So swinging staffs, you know, it felt awesome to swing that. But swinging anything, a club, just like you were saying, for all of human history, we've been swinging hammers. That's what makes us. For all of human history.
Just swinging. So there's something relating back to what Will said. So in a lot of old cultures that we have data from, let's go with Chinese, the way that you made somebody healthy for a long time was to teach them martial arts, was specifically to teach them staff, or staff with a ball on the end of it, which is a mace. The monkey god literally uses that, right? The monkey god staff and the monkey god mace in different types of depictions. If you look at ancient cultures, the king had a mace. The king had a mace, right? It is the ultimate symbol of human movement. It's the ultimate symbol of power, and we're not doing it. So what if we just set a series of experiments, got rid of all of the cultural nonsense, threw away all the names, threw away everything, and turned it back into pure experimental science, and we let everybody rediscover the most important things that humans do for themselves in a way that means that they can never forget it. And then they will optimize their health and fitness around that idea forever. Good ideas come up over and over and over again in history. And you see staff and mace and warrior stance and training on unlevel ground and focusing on expanding and contracting your rib cage show up in, I can think of at least six off the top of my head where I can point to it on a wall in different sides of the planet from vastly different times. It's going to keep showing up. And so we should just go back to doing the thing that we should do so that we understand why we're doing the things that we do. Like, is bench press fun? Yes. Is shield cast better? Objectively, definitely. Objectively, definitely. The thing that informs all human movement in everything is some version of staff fighting. Staff fighting means that you have to respond. It's not a staff form. It's not staff flow. It is an external output that you cannot predict yet. Somebody is going to make a decision, and that's going to drive everything. And if we run those experiments long enough, we're just going to recreate all of human history again.
Well, and one side of it is swinging, one side of defending, and you're preventing violence against yourself when you block those blows. Like, that has a mentally powerful stimulus on the human. Like, you can't help but be more confident in yourself when you literally 100 times in a row stop yourself from being fucking murdered.
Oh, dude, when you were trying to hit me, like, I've never done this before. So you were just trying to hit me with the staff. I was like, holy shit, man. Like, if I didn't have a staff, you would be so completely helpless against someone who had a club or a stick.
Yeah.
You could fuck somebody up with one of those things.
Yeah. So, like, Will here is a great... has a great knowledge of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, like a world-class,
epic,
probably one of the most knowledgeable guys on the surface of the planet. He travels all over the world. But he talks to everybody. He goes everywhere. He has a very unique perspective.
So you're purple,
on this one
purple belt?
Brown.
Brown belt. Brown. Brown. Sorry.
But he travels all over the world all the time, talks to the best guys on the planet. And as much as I love guys who do jiu-jitsu, I love it. It's in every culture. Wrestling is fundamental human action. It's everywhere. They carve it into walls. They carve it into stone. Everywhere in all of human history, a generally untrained guy with a bat is extraordinarily dangerous to the best wrestlers in the world.
Oh, for sure. For sure. A weapon, I mean, forget about it.
It's a force multiplier.
I mean, I was thinking, like, dude, those staffs that you have are pretty sick. I don't know what they're, like, polyurethane or something
they're
like that.
They're polypropylene. So they're essentially, as I understand it, one long, essentially contiguous molecule because there's no breaks in the
polymer
structure
chain.
In the polymer chain. Thank you, G-Money. I have a chemistry degree, by the way.
I was just thinking, how would I... It went through my mind, like, getting back to your point about, like, defending yourself and the psychology of it all, it really does also make you realize how fucking vulnerable you are without a weapon. And then also, without a weapon... Like, even if you did have a weapon...
What are you going to do with it? How to use it, right?
So this is hilarious. You take trained martial artists who've been doing martial arts for 20 years. This happens all the time. I have guys show up to these seminars. I've done 12 years of this, and I do this. And I'm like, great, we're just going to have this one stick. And we're going to remove all the cultural context and all the belts and everything. And I'm going to swing this at your head. But I'm not going to tell you how I'm going to do it ahead of time. There's only three options. But you have to observe, orient, and decide it. And act against those three options. And people are like, people get kind of generally upset because they're like, I have been doing shit for 20 years and I'm supposed to be a badass and I don't know fucking shit. Yeah. I took a sword guy and he's like, oh, I've been doing swords for 20 years. And I was like, great, here's a sword. And he goes, yeah. And I go, great, defend yourself. And he's like, oh, you're gonna swing at me? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, these are real swords. And I was like, you've done it for 20 years. I hope you can do something. He was absolutely getting trounced. And he was like, all the forms taught me the perfect position, but nobody let me run the experiment to collect the data, to draw the conclusion, to put the forms into action.
Yeah. All right. Closing thoughts. This is about an hour. And, you know, we're here in Viesta. It's our last day. Well, it's my last day. It's been an honor to hang out here with the Speed Force Vector, Spiral Triangle.
So we are Speed Force Vector, me, G Money Mustache, and Will Safford. And we have added the Spiral with
the
Danny
necessary
Kohler.
Spiral.
The necessary Spiral.
It's a fucking honor.
A third dimension up from the triangle.
Sir.
It's an honor. I've had a fantastic time. It's one of those things that I was looking forward to, connecting with all you guys and just learning all this stuff and talking about it, breaking shit down. And we'll all go back to our, you know, our homes, different parts of the world, Vancouver, New York, Ohio, and wherever the fuck else you're going, Mark, you know, Chicago. And I get excited to share this with my local community. And, you know, it just makes me more excited to keep building the thing that I'm building and stick to my ultimate goal of allowing people to give this information to them so that they could ultimately physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually optimize and become the best version of themselves possible. It's really in my heart, and that's pretty much what is driving me to do the work that I do. And I think we all fundamentally have that in common.
100%.
You know, 100%. We all want to try to do something to make the world a little bit better, and we're using our God-given unique skills to do that. So it's an honor to be here with you gentlemen, and I look forward to the next one.
Absolutely.
Likewise, man. Thanks for thanks for doing this.
Absolutely.
Thanks
so much.
And that was the podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. If any of this information resonated with you, please share this podcast with somebody you love. Check out my Instagram at Danny Kohler Fitness and make sure to follow the guys that were in this podcast on social media. You can follow Mark Wildman on Instagram at Mark Wildman, and you can find his YouTube channel, which is the same, at Mark Wildman. You can find Gareth Ham on Instagram at G-Money Mustache. And you can connect with Will Safford on Instagram at WillSaffordBJJ. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. Have a wonderful day.